Hey everyone, welcome in to the Woj Pod. I'm in Houston this week with Rockets General Manager Daryl Morey. We hit on a ton of stuff. Think you'll enjoy our visit as much as I did recording it with Daryl here. So let's get right to it. Rockets General Manager Daryl Morey. Here with Rockets GM Daryl Morey. Daryl, how are you?
Good, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. When you're not trying to make big trades in mid to late August, Daryl, is this the one window of time where you feel like you can, free agency's gone, training camp's still a bit away, and again, when you're not trying to do something big, is this the one window of the year where you feel like you can catch your breath?
Yeah, I mean, no one's worried about my time, but I would say generally that's true. Obviously, we've got an ownership sale,
right.
So it's been a little bit more intense this year, and we try to inject a lot of like long range planning into this period. So, but yeah, no, I think if people are trying to get away, we usually August is the best time.
You mentioned the ownership change, and Leslie Alexander announced recently putting the team up for sale. Your career as a GM in this league, and you think about the opportunity Leslie Alexander gave you at a time when you were an unconventional hire at the time, and he went out on a limb. I imagine there's got to be a part of you that will always be pretty grateful to that, because not everybody would have maybe had the foresight that he did to do that.
Yeah, I owe him almost everything. His vision for the team, which was here before I even got here, and the team had a great track record before I got here, and thankfully we've been able to sustain it with, you know, the second best record in the league over the last 11 years, things like that. But he took me from obscurity with the Celtics. Obviously, I, you know, had a great situation there with great ownership who gave me my first shot in professional sports, and somehow, you know, gave me a chance that I think no one else would have. I think, frankly, Chris Wallace said it best, because we were working together at the time. Our last season with the Celtics was actually one of the worst seasons in Celtics history. And after that season, both he and I got GM jobs, and Chris said it best. He said, only in the NBA would one of the worst teams get two GMs hired from there. And, you know, I'll always be grateful to Leslie, and you know, and he gave me all the resources to generate the success we've had, and you know, we're finally positioned in what I think is what we've been working towards, which is have two top players in the league and a great supporting cast, and it's all thanks to him.
We'll get to Chris Paul, James Harden, but you talk about ownership in this league, and sometimes it takes I think it takes being in the job for a long time to even know what's important about what you need from an owner. And I think sometimes when you go through it, you have a better sense of the support you need and all the things that go into, it's no accident who wins in the NBA and who consistently doesn't. And usually it gets back to ownership. Besides money, having a lot of money, because there's a lot of owners who spend money, who are willing to invest, but they're not good owners. What separates, do you think, the really good ones from the ones who aren't any good at it beyond just means?
First, I'll agree with you. There's no accident that Leslie has only had three losing seasons in the 22 years that he owned the team. Might be 23. And, yeah, there are a lot that will invest, and Leslie was obviously always willing to invest in anything we asked him to do, new facilities, new, you know, more staff, build out our data infrastructure, pay for this code, everything. But what separates the great owners are what the elements he has, which is obviously a very – very smart, forward-looking approach, meaning he's not just, you know, driving from the rearview mirror and trying to do what everyone else is doing. Obviously, my good fortune to get hired here was part of that. And then on top of that, it's to stay active, and it's to ask all the right questions. So people, I don't know where the perception came from, but there's been a perception that you want a owner who is hands off, you know, just gives the money and is hands off. I think that's one of the strangest notions that's ever been foisted upon fan bases. It's actually the owner that really is the only one who has exactly the same incentives as fans. And the fans care about their team winning consistently and having a chance to win the title. The reality is executives in my role, coaches, they all have other things they worry about, like their career and things like that. So having an active, smart owner who, when you're about to make a decision, says, should we really give up three draft first-round picks for that? Have you thought about doing it this way? Those questions and having them be smart questions and insisting on getting good answers are what's key for a well-run franchise. And it's why I think the Western teams have won consistently. Everyone keeps asking. I just think, you know, well, there are exceptions. There are great Eastern owners too. But, like, in general, the Western Conference owners have been better.
You know, it's a great point you brought up about asking the questions about direction. A GM might say, hey, listen, I can buy myself a second contract here by really extending a rebuild, which might be more about your own personal agenda versus the team. And you're right. The owner, in the end, it is more like the fans, because he's got to see through if he has a GM who has that agenda to just, can I just extend a rebuild long enough that you have – that I'm not going to be judged on results during my first contract.
Yeah, it happens in both directions, both on a rebuild, which is a great point. And you see teams that are on, you know, year 12 of a rebuild where they haven't won more than the 41 games in our worst season that we've been here. But it happens on the other end too, which is like you got one more year on your deal. You need to prove something. So you make a trade and you give up a lot of future assets. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, that – you know, people in that role might think, hey, you know, it'll either work out and I'll still be here or it won't. And I might not be here anyway. So why not go for it? And that's where an owner really needs to protect the fan base, protect the franchise.
What was the hardest decision or the hardest direction that you and Leslie had to make together at any point in your ownership where you said, which way are we going? And you really labored over?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we labored over it, but the most important decision in my tenure, because I came and it was a solid team. I mean, it was, you know, Coach Van Gundy was the coach. We had a, you know, we had injuries the year before, but it was a solid team that if you surrounded Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady with good players, you were going to be solid in the West. So I saw my job there as maintaining that and improving the team to be championship. And in 2009, we had our best team. I thought we had a shot, and then we had a lot of injuries. When Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady injuries caught up to them, we had a very big strategic decision. You know, many teams in that instance at least, you know, get bad either by choice or not for at least 1 year, maybe two. And in fact, you can't really find a team that doesn't go through a dip without, you know, to get back up. And, you know, for me, it was one that we had to discuss because, again, there's classic examples of, you know, whether it be the Spurs having a bad season to get Duncan, or even the Lakers had a bad year to get Bynum the 1 year who people don't remember had, you know, contributed a lot during a lot of those times. But for me, it was something we had to talk about. But for Leslie and myself and others, it was very clear that, like, we were going to find a third path. And, you know, it doesn't always work. You have to both do things well and have good fortune. We have to be able to create the situation to be able to trade for James Harden, but he also has to become available, and it's rare that someone like that becomes available. So you need both. Every executive in this league, unless they're lying, knows that you have to both have great planning, but you also have to have good fortune. You need both those to come together, and we did in getting James, and now he's obviously our foundational piece.
When you think back to the James Harden trade, you had been gathering up assets to try to be in position for someone to become available. And we've seen Boston has been doing that here for over an extended period, waiting for that one guy, and he may come and they're in position if that player becomes available. But you didn't go as long of a period of time where you have sort of were hoarding and waiting. That became available. But is there an uneasiness in an organization? Because A, you don't know if that kind of player becomes available is pretty rare. And then can we get them? And you wonder, there's always got to be a part of you going, are we just holding on to these for something that's not going to come, right? That's the unease of it, right?
I would say in that situation, you have to be less picky. So, right. You know, people know. I mean, we ultimately traded for James Harden, but we had made, you know, attempts to trade for multiple people before that, and they just didn't work out. We ended up getting the best of all those, James. That doesn't always happen. If we had done an earlier trade, we might have still been able to trade for James. You don't know. You don't know how that plays out. But the reality is, yeah, I think you have to be not super picky in that. Like, if you're going to go that route of never, you know, dipping below 500 and having a bad year to pick a high pick, you, as a corollary to that, you can't be super picky on your trades that you're going to attempt. And you have to take on some variance and some risk in it. And, you know, even the James Harden trade, obviously we were thrilled to do it. But if you look at the time, it was like 40% of people thought that we didn't get the better end of that trade. People thought he was just an off-the-bench scorer, that Durant and Westbrook were the ones that, you know, really set the environment that allowed him to be successful. And, you know, he was obviously even better than we thought, right? Right. I mean, but we thought he was very good, and he ended up being better. And it's obviously then his relationship that we've had with him to build a team around him since then has been really the key to our success.
You brought up an interesting point about at the time. You ended up having on that team three MVP caliber players. At the time, I think maybe everybody thought Durant was an MVP caliber player. Maybe even Russell. I'm not sure everyone knew Russell was going to be that, and then James. But I always thought that first night that James Harden at Detroit, where he came and he put up, what, 40-something, right?
Yeah, he had more than 40 points.
Right.
And
I think everyone went, whoa, right, whoa.
Including us.
Right?
Yeah. And in fact, the key thing I remember, I always talk about as the hour I want back in my life, and it was me negotiating with Rob Pelinka. In the final throes of his extension, we signed the extension minutes before the game started. Yeah. And we had just been through, you know, injuries with Tracy McGrady and Yao Ming. And what I was trying to get out of Rob at that moment was, hey, if he, you know, happens to get injured, we don't, you know, the last year of this massive deal we were signing him, we'd like it to be partially guaranteed. And so, you know, Rob, we're going back and forth, and eventually it ended up being like a very fair thing for both sides at the end. But, you know, the out was if he ever makes an all-star team, it immediately becomes guaranteed, which is, we were totally fine with that. You know, it was clear he was going to be an all-star from the first 10 minutes of the first game. And so Rob and I laugh about that as like just the longest wasted negotiation in history because, you know, he's obviously someone worth, you know, almost anyone, the highest in the league. So
James's part in bringing Chris Paul here, I mean, it's been an evolution. I think even since you've been in the league or been in front office, the impact that players have in recruiting, in helping to put together teams, we've seen it. I think LeBron maybe accelerated it in the league, and then it became more common, and you really saw it with James this year with Chris. Is that a natural ability a player just has? Do you have to coach a player in doing it, or is it just a natural inclination that guys have? Either they have the ability to do that or they don't.
I would say, yeah, with James, I can just speak to him. We don't, there's no coaching there. I would say he's not naturally an extroverted guy. He's a worker, a quiet guy who just wants to win. His first job, if he wasn't doing this, wouldn't be like, you know, the lead sales guy somewhere, right? He'd be probably the strategic guy somewhere because he's so smart. So, but that said, I mean, he just had one-on-one. He's so good with people. And obviously the great players are all together, whether it be USA basketball or weddings or whatever it is. They get together, and they talk, and, you know, one-on-one, I can say, you know, James is an unbelievable recruiter because he's smart. He understands the plan, you know, that he wants to execute for the team that he's leading. And, you know, it makes my job easy, frankly, to have him.
The unorthodox nature of the way you acquired Chris Paul, nobody was ready for that. It could be a
trade.
You
were always ready. Did you have the tweet ready?
Well, I do remember how I worded it because it was, I was trying to figure out how to get that he was opting into the deal and then there was a trade. Because I remember if I just write he was traded, that's going to be really confusing. What do you mean he's traded? Free agency starting. And there actually had been stories that he had already opted out of his deal, which he obviously physically, they had never sent that paperwork in. But obviously some creativity came into that. The Clippers had gotten to a point where it was communicated to them from Chris and his group that he was not going to re-sign with them, and they had to make a decision about do we call his bluff and see if he can figure out a way to get – because he told them Houston was his focus – or do we just sort of cut our losses and do a trade with them that had come up. I guess his opt-in date allowed for that whole scenario really to happen, right?
Right. It created a deadline. You know more than me on this because
zero chance.
You know, I don't get obviously with your relationships, you're able to talk to players and all this kind of stuff. So you probably know more than me on this, but you know, the great thing that happened for both franchises, the Clippers and us, was it was figured out at some point that if a trade was done early and Chris was willing to opt in, that could create a win-win scenario for Chris, for the Clippers, for the Rockets, where there's a bigger pie because we can create a better team around Chris and James. That allows us to give up more so the Clippers can get more, and it allows Chris to be on a better team in Houston. So it created a win-win-win, and, you know, that's sort of, and then that having sort of the deadline of, him needing to opt in by a certain date, you know, pushes the timing of that. And honestly, in the NBA, it's frustrating at times. Nothing happens without a deadline. You don't have a deadline, everyone waits. Like, you need a trade deadline, you need the draft day, you need something, or otherwise everyone just says, you know, F you, we're just going to wait, you know. And it frustrates me and other GMs at times because we're obviously willing to move earlier. But I would say generally, unless there's a deadline, nothing happens.
Usually you remind me of it every year. There's the artificial Rockets trade deadline that comes a month before everybody else.
We've been working on a deadline. Yeah, just to create – it's a real deadline.
I think the league understands it now because you guys do operate because it allows you to do what by having your own deadline?
If you do it by December, if you do moves by mid-December, roughly, it allows you to stay flexible at the trade deadline. If you do things anything past that date, you're sort of locked in into your team early, right? So by doing things before mid-December, it allows you to stay flexible, which we value maybe more than most teams. And so that's, you know, that's – and we've done several trades around that time, and so have other teams now. So I think it's – I think it's creating some momentum. We just need a name for it. We need the NBA to put it on the calendar, and then that'll help teams that are aggressive like us because we need those deadlines to get things done.
The Woj Pod.
Daryl, let me take a minute to tell my listeners about ZipRecruiter.com. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, and all of it with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Woj, W-O-J. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj, W-O-J. Support for the Woj Pod comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time and make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply. Understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Woj. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Is it harder to get big deals done in the league now than even when you started? Is there more because of the analysis? This wasn't always the case in the league. I think people didn't know who all the GMs were. Now you're all celebrities. You're all stories in and of yourself because free agency trades, maybe it's because of our business. It's created such a focus on it. It's its own sport within a sport. And I think sometimes it might create guys don't want to get criticized. They don't want their owner. This is the one I get a lot is if an owner sees criticism of a potential trade or a trade, and then they react to the GM or the front office because they see fans or media come out with a negative reaction to a deal, that can paralyze some activity. Does it all feel different now than even when you started working for Danny Ainge in Boston?
For me, it feels similar. Maybe it shouldn't, but I've always felt like it's hard to get anything done. And, you know, I've described it, not to go geeky on here, but I describe it as basically, you know, if you're a probability statistics guy, it's type one error, type two error, and it's pretty easy to understand. So, unfortunately, owners and fan bases criticize more moves done that don't turn out than moves not done that you could have done that would have turned out. So it makes sense because it's hard for people to keep track of all the things you could have done. But the reality is you should, like, especially if you're an owner, this is where good owners come in again. You should, and Leslie did this, you should criticize both. So if a good deal happens somewhere else, and it's obvious that you could have done it, that should be criticized just as much. And because only moves that are done that don't work out are criticized, it means people do less and less deals because I'm only going to get judged on the ones I actually do.
Right. You're not going to know about the three or four I turned down that would have been.
Exactly. Right. But it's that dynamic that actually really helps us. So when you get a player out there like James Harden, you know, the reality is that, you know, Oklahoma City should probably get a lot more for him, right? Because there should be like a rush to the door to try and trade for him. But because of this, you know, people only criticizing the errors that you do, you know, when you're trying to make a move, you generally don't get as much as you should, unfortunately. And I do think one dynamic I've talked to Coach Van Gundy about that I think is right is that it looks like all 30 head coaches are coming back, right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like there are quite a few changes in GMs this past season, I think.
He's been a big advocate of that.
Yeah. Well, he's right. So he and I talked about this right. When he was the coach for our team. Like, it should be the opposite. There should be more turnover in my job and less turnover in the coach's job. But it isn't for some reason. So one sign the league is changing is that there's more turnover in my job than there is in the coach's job. It might be the only time in history. I haven't looked at it, but it's got to be. If it's happened another time, it's only been once. So I think owners are getting smarter about how they judge, you know, GMs on their draft, free agent, trade, overall strategy.
The thing, too, here, you guys have never been afraid to – when you think about two biggest free agent – well, Chris was a trade – but it's somewhere between a trade and a free agent. It was a forced trade because of free agency. So I'm going to put Chris in the category of a free agent because you were going to get him in free agency. So whatever you
No, that's right. That, and if right. you technically look back, like even the, you know, the Super Friends of Miami, those were all trades even though they were really free agency.
Right.
So yeah, those are all really free agency moves.
So you had two players from LA. You had Dwight Howard with the Lakers who that whole year all of us said, you know what, even if Dwight isn't that happy here, he's not going to leave the Lakers. He's not going to leave L.A. because no one's ever done it. He won't. And even with Chris, it was, well, Chris may not love what's going on with the Clippers, but his marketing, all the outside things, they still can pay him the most money. Chris will probably stay, and neither did. And both decided to come here. And I think you guys are one of the first examples of, and Houston's not a small market. Houston's a big market team. But LA's LA, New York's New York. There's a difference. But I think you guys always have had an aggressiveness about if we just have something that, and I think both cases, it was a great player somebody wants to play with. We're big enough showing out people your cap, your roster, that you have just been this organization that said, we're not going to be afraid to go big game hunting, right? Whether it was Durant in Oklahoma City, like we're going to try to compete with anybody. We can compete with anybody. And you've, I think at the beginning, put yourself in some that people didn't think you'd even be in, and then you got some. And I just think there was a mentality here from the beginning of, we're just going after people.
Yeah, I mean, the NBA is about the big game. I mean, that, you know, it's, if you don't have a top player in the league, you know, no NBA team really talks about this, but you may as well not play the game. I mean, like, you have no shot if you don't have at least one top player. And the reality is, to win the title, you generally need two. Oh, there's like two exceptions in 50 years. So it's, you know, it's all about big game hunting. So I don't know why you wouldn't be doing that. Now, I get that, you know, and the other thing that I don't get is a lot of teams that I've seen, they don't want to get involved in a process unless their odds are very high. We've said screw that. Like, why should anyone care that we've spent countless hours prepping for a meeting if, you know, if it doesn't work out, the worst thing that happens is nothing, right? Yeah. And so, but I've seen there are teams that like say, I don't want to get involved. It'll look bad if we involve ourselves and don't win. But, you know, honestly, no one should care that we spent, you know, 3 weeks of 100 hours to prep for a free agent meeting and then it doesn't happen. Like, I don't understand why people care, but some teams do.
How much of your time is spent thinking about the Warriors, thinking about ways to build a roster where, listen, there's probably no way right now to have a roster where you are just have a better, deeper, more talented roster. That's just not realistic. But trying to think of other ways to close the gap on them. How much of your time here is spent on how can we close the gap on them in ways that aren't just about getting the best players?
Generally, I felt like prepping or thinking about one team in your strategic planning is a mistake. That's what I would have answered for the last, I'm in the league now 15 years. Now we're in the situation where, you know, I think we have a good chance to be the second best team in the NBA. In fact, you know, Vegas sitting right now thinks that. Unfortunately, you got to prove that on the floor, and we're going to have to do that. But we are, and the other thing that's difficult right now with the Warriors is they're a historically great team. They could end this run as being one of the best teams of all time. And in fact, you can argue some of these teams already have been close to that or were that. So I am actually forced to think about the Warriors because the reality is we're here to just win the title. That's all I think about. And so you can't help but think about the Warriors. And it's not just closing the gap. It's, because we're not going to close it the whole way. We do feel like we closed it a lot this summer, but you're never, I don't say never, it's going to be extraordinarily difficult to, you know, there haven't been 270-win teams in a season, right? So it's nearly impossible. So you not only want to add players to get you closer, which I think we've done with Chris Paul, but you also need to take more risks. And so, you know, we're going to continue to end up being in the news because we're going to continue to try and take risks to get better. And some of those things, you know, we haven't been perfect in our moves. I could rattle off all our mistakes over the last 11 years and we may make a few more because, you know, we're to close that gap with the Warriors. We have to take risks and ones that may not even make sense to some people on the surface.
Darryl, as you say, an historically great team in Golden State. And sometimes you can be a victim of your era. I mean, how much does an organization have to fight? Because it's easy for a lot of people just to throw their hands up and say, come on, you can't expect us to win. Look at the Warriors. I don't know. I think you see teams trying to do one or two things right now, completely retreating and just kind of wait this out. Or there's a few who are really trying to get better and go for it. Everybody's trying to get out of that middle area right there and not. You're one of the few going for it. Part of that is obviously you look at you and Oklahoma, you two great players in their prime who you wanted to keep, who you want to re-sign. And, you know, some other teams like Portland in the West because they have two all-star caliber guards. Let's keep going. Nurkic, we'll keep going. But a league of a lot of other people just stepping back.
I understand the teams that are marking time because, I mean, it obviously, you know, it's got to be. I wasn't in the league in the 90s when the Bulls were on their crazy run and winning 70 games and it's got to feel like that. I mean, I'd love to say there's a lot of thought going into it here, but there, I mean, we have one of the best players in the league, top five for sure, top three arguably. And so we have to. So, you know, I mean, James's prime is overlapping with one of the all-time great teams. That's just how it is. Like, we can't change when James's prime is. So we're in it full bore.
The Woj Pod.
Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a very confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you'd like to go to, and none of those other ticket sites want to change that, but SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And it's pretty neat how they do it too. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and you never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if ticket prices fall. And even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I use it often because it's simple and it works. Used it last week in Chicago, bought Cubs tickets, went to Wrigley Field, had not done that in maybe 17, 18 years. It was pretty neat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to bamboozle you with big fees on the checkout page. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right in your pocket. And all you've got to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter a promo code WOJ, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. It does not get any easier than that. So please support SeatGeek like they support us here at the WOJ Pod. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J today. And now back to our guest, Houston Rockets GM Daryl Morey. Having James locked up now for 6 years with this deal, and you're seeing this generation, well, this group of players with a new CBA be able to have, you know, $200 million in guaranteed money locked in. The thought with the league was having the Supermax contract, having where it's a renegotiation where actually he's on the 6 years and window of 6 years right now, is that it was going to keep guys in places. Do you really think it has? Are guys going to stay in places they don't really want to be? Paul George would have had the opportunity to do it if he made the All-Star team next year, didn't. Will it have the effect the league thought it had, which was the money is just so great, it'll slow some player movement?
I think it has to help. I mean, the key tests that would have been tests this offseason didn't get tested because some of the key players didn't make the All-NBA teams, which similar like comments on, you know, the process for voting for all these things is so difficult. I don't have a solution. I know baseball's done things with having like just set, you know, criteria that's like objective, that is no one voting. You could argue for that because, you know, it's a lot of responsibility for the media now. I mean, they're determining hundreds of millions of dollars in some cases, to the point where I know our local media people opted out because they didn't want to have that responsibility.
Yeah, and I haven't voted for anything in years. And when I was running the vertical and we had our staff, as a staff, I made sure we didn't vote. I always said, listen, it's not my league, it's your league. And you decide, it's not our job to make news. And it's certainly not our job to influence balance of power. And that's what's going on now.
Yeah.
And like, number one, I don't think it's right. I don't want that responsibility. I shouldn't have it. And even practically, hey, listen, it spares me a lot of, I don't have to worry about GMs calling me, agents calling me, players complaining. You didn't vote for me. I didn't vote for anybody. And I'm not voting for anybody.
It's that's smart.
Like selfishly.
I think that's more going to do that.
But it's not right. And I don't know what the right formula is.
There isn't.
It shouldn't be us.
Yeah, there could be, again, baseball's done this on things like compensation and other areas where you have like a set objective criteria, winning, whatever it might be, that determines some of these things. Because it's really the process we have for, you know, all NBA, MVP, you know, all these, you know, Coach of the Year, all these awards is like, it's, I know it's historic, I know it's how it's all, but it's pretty pretty broken, honestly, in my opinion, and then too much attached to it. So we didn't really get to test, you know, the key tests this offseason because of that. But it was a step. It has to be positive. Like, but I just, how big it'll be, I don't know.
You look at the end of your season, Daryl. Do you just chalk it up as James had a bad game, a couple bad games? Or was he tired? Was there something bigger that you had to examine or have to examine about where he was at the very end?
There are a lot of things. You always reflect when you go through that. I know James did. I would say from my perspective, it was a big motivation with the Chris Paul move. It's just too much to ask one guy to, you know, carry a team all the way to the, whether it be Western Conference Finals or Finals. And it caught up to him. Another thing, people, you know, Nene, who, you know, tied the playoff record going 12 for 12 against Oklahoma City, he was out at that point. I mean, we have a lot of excuses. The reality is we needed to do better. There's no doubt about that. But we also knew that to get past the Spurs, who are, you know, the all-time great franchise for the last 25 years, you know, we needed to not put that much of a burden on one guy. And I think Chris allows us to do that. And so, you know, the Chris move, obviously, you know, it's an important move no matter what, but I think a big thing is you won't see a guy, you know, dragging on the last few steps up the mountain to try and win a title.
Operating as you have to do in the Western Conference, competing against the Spurs and when the Mavericks were a contender, the Warriors now, you go through the franchises you had to compete with to just make the playoffs. Does it almost feel like you're in a different league than the East? Like literally we're competing. It's not a different conference. It's a different league right now.
It's great. If you look at the three top records over the last 11 years or even going a little bit farther back, it's Dallas, San Antonio, Houston, and then it's, you know, the other team. So the idea that, and we have to play each other a lot. So it's crazy actually that the three top records over the last 11 years have all been from one division of one conference. And then if you expand past that, you know, some of the all-time great franchises of the Western Conference. So it does feel like, you know, the Western Conference Finals is generally the finals and has been for a while now. We're on like almost 20 years until the East, you know, had really been competitive with the West. So yeah, my whole career, it's been that way.
I know we could have gone longer. You've got a volleyball game to get to. And if you and I didn't BS so much beforehand, we would have turned the recorder on earlier. So I'm going to let you get out of here, Daryl, but I appreciate you taking the time as always.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate
it. All right. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, Rockets GM Daryl Morey. Remember, you can subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes of the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Apple Pods or wherever you get your shows. You can also hear the Woj Pod every Wednesday and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. I'd also like to take a moment to thank today's sponsors, ZipRecruiter and SeatGeek. We'll catch you next time.